This is Jennifer Hunt with Mary Howard Jones on the 23rd of June 2014 at Royal Voluntary Service, Cardiff Gate, Wales. So Mary, would you like to just introduce yourself?
I've been around through many changes of WRVS, WVS and now Royal Voluntary Service. I was 20 when I joined, and I joined Civil Defence Ambulance Service.
And so before you joined WVS, what did you know about the organisation?
Quite a lot, because it was during the war, and my mother was WVS, and she used to look after the evacuees, because during the dark ages she had been a nurse in the 19-whatevers before she was married in 1918. So I knew about the evacuees.
What sort of things was your mother doing with the evacuees?
She would meet them from the train or whatever transport they had to the place in Cowbridge. We lived in Cowbridge in those days, and usually at the town hall, where unfortunately she had to check them for cleanliness.
And did she have any other roles in WVS?
Eventually, my father was promoted to North Wales, so she ended up, that was after the war, we moved in 1945, and she was in the office answering the telephone because they were very short. I think they only had about 4 members in Prestatyn.
And so what made you decide to join in 1953?
Well, I was quite busy doing lots of things, but I was working for the GPO full time as a telegraphist. Got in from work, and my mother said, "Oh, I've heard a very interesting programme today. The WVS I'm looking for, on behalf of Civil Defence, for people to be ambulance drivers." And she said, "I thought that would be just the job you'd like."
And what's your earliest memory of being an ambulance driver with WVS?
Well, I had to do all the training because I was carrying radioactive material sealed in steel containers, so I had to learn to drive this large ambulance because it was like a green goddess. A lot of people will remember those if there's been a fire strike and everything. I don't think they're used now, but I also had to learn all about Geiger counters, and I was trained on that. And then they decided, because I knew a lot of telegraphy, that I could help them on a field radio. So I helped on the field radio with Civil Defence as well.
And could you describe to me what a Geiger counter is?
The Geiger counter is to test radioactivity, because if you're working in a dangerous field, it always has to be tested. And I was the only female, and I was young, I was only 20, so I had a great time with these men, very often in darkened rooms and things, and I had to know how to test them running these Geiger counters, rather like going through the security at airports.
And what you've talked about, you said, mentioned that you had lots of training. What did the training involve?
Well, I had to learn how to use all the Geiger counters, and I also had to put on masks and go through smoke-filled places, because when I had to also attend WVS 5-in-1, I think they were called, lectures on how people were managing. But the instructor made rather an odd comment. She said, "None of you need worry. It's only ambulance drivers who'll be in the danger zone." I just continued. I thought, I'm learning so much. And in those days, Wales was deciding to be a non-nuclear area. How they'd stop any reaction from coming over the borders, I don't know.
And so was that part of the training, was that one in five talk?
It wouldn't be normally. The WES did the one in five lectures to know how to look after people and different things, because then they were realising people were being bombed out. It was happening in Swansea and Bridgend and Cardiff, and they had to learn all about that. But being in North Wales is a little bit different, because most of the bombing was then further across in Liverpool and Manchester.
Can you tell me about the people you worked with Civil Defence and the ambulance?
Well, that was all with the men, because I seemed to be the only female around, because it was 45, and of course most of the men as my two brothers, they were involved in the war. So it was the older men who'd been perhaps in the war earlier. So I was working just with the men who were older.
And how did your role as an ambulance driver and with the radioactive team change over time?
Actually, I was never called out for anything because we didn't get any atom bombs dropped near us. But I had the knowledge, which came in useful later on. I'd never actually used it, but it was interesting learning to double declutch, which people listening to this, older people, might know about double declutching.
And could you tell me what double declutching is?
Well, when you're driving a car, if you want to change gear, you just press the old clutch down and change gear. But in those days, you had to press the clutch, move the gear stick and press the clutch again and then get into the right gear. So it was interesting, but I make a lot of people laugh when they hear that I've learned to do that. They say, I've never even heard of it.
And how would you describe the ambulance you were going to drive?
Very heavy, but because I was carrying radioactive material, they had radioactive, I can't remember the name of it now, they had buttons that had been processed to be highly radioactive, so that had to be in like a rather large thermos, and it was double sealed with solid metal, and that was in the back of the ambulance, and I was never allowed to park near any cars. That was quite easy in 45, 46, 47, because not many people had cars. We were lucky, but so you had to learn that it was a dangerous thing.
And do you have any other stories or memories about your time as an ambulance driver?
Not really, because I went to a royal event because the civil defence were there. The worst thing was the uniform. It was a bit horrendous. And when they recalled all the uniform in the 60s, I was delighted to get rid of it. So it was dark, it was navy blue, and the shoes would have been dreadful.
And did they recall the uniform when the civil defence corps was disbanded?
That's right. In about 63, I believe, around there. And that was safely at home with my mother, so I think she was there to get rid of it as well.
And did you have any other roles or experiences with WVS in real and prestatic?
Not so much really, because I did deal with the civil defence people who were mainly in moulds. They used to have to come and take me out and everything. So my mother went to the royal event because the Queen Mother was there, but I went to civil defence in a horribly heavy uniform.
And you also wrote on your form that you were involved with WVS in Haverford West.
Yes, eventually, you know, moving around the place, I ended up in Haverford West, and that was great. I became a village rep. I lived in Manorbier, and it was at the time of the Butter Mountain, and giving out the Butter Mountain and the cheese and everything. Unfortunately, we never did get the wine, so that would have been fun. Probably it would have been a case of delivering empty bottles. But being an honest WVS, probably would have delivered it all.
And so between in 1953 and 1985, you were in North Wales, weren't you?
Yes, and I got married in 64, so.
And were you involved at all in the 25th anniversary in 1963?
I'm just trying to work out where I was. Yes, I think I went to a service, but I can't really remember much about that because I was doing 900 other things as well, plus working full time.
And did you, in that time, you would have also received your 15-year service medal?
Actually, I didn't, because when I was in when I was moved, then I moved to near Aberdare, and I was applying for a medal, and I was told, no, you can't claim the civil defence part, which surprised me because it was linked to WVS. And one day, I can't remember who was down in Cardiff, it was when we went on internet and everything else, and she said, how long have you been in? I said, well, I actually joined when I was 20 in 1953. She said, so you've got a lot of medal. You've got your medal and some clasps. I said, well, no, I was told I couldn't claim the civil defence part. Mm. But then it was arranged for me to have backdated, so I did have.
Yeah. And did you have any experiences with Lady Reading?
No. She was up in London and I was sort of floating around Wales.
And did you notice, well, after she died in 1971, did you notice a change to the organisation?
I don't think so, because I was quite involved and we didn't get the links. I think I've had more links with everything since moving more to the Midglamorgan, because I was given many different roles and so I was more in touch with people in the office as well.
And also in 1966, at that time, the name was changed. We got the Royal in the name. Can you tell me about that?
Yes, that's been easy to remember because my second daughter was born in 66, so I can easily rattle that one off. So people think I'm quite clever, but I'm not really. I just link it to my daughter's age. And in 66, I was just floating around doing a bit of everything. I already had three children, so not only doing Butter Mountains and Cheese Mountains and everything else in Pembrokeshire and Midglamorgan, I was, you know, quite involved in my family.
Mm-hmm. And what were you involved in at the time of WRVS? Was it old people's welfare?
I think then it became old people's welfare, because I think I had one badge saying old people's welfare, but that has changed all the way through, ending up now as a volunteer partner, which is quite good because you're dealing with other people who are in and they don't very often have the contact with the office. In fact, a lot of people seem very hesitant to ring the office, and of course as things change it gets even harder, and people in the clubs that I deal with are getting older.
So you moved to the Midglamorgan area. What's your earliest memory of volunteering in that?
They had all my details and there was a bit of a gap, and I thought, well, I was so busy because all my children were away in schools and things, so I had more time on my hands. And I thought, I can't just be doing nothing, because I've always been very busy. I can easily run my home, deal with the children wherever they are. And so I actually joined for a short while the CAB. And no sooner had I joined that, WRVS got in touch with me, and that was from the office in Pontypridd in those days. And suddenly I found I was fully involved with Butter Mountains yet again. No wine. And so really it took off from there, because then I started looking after the clubs. I was helping in the Magistrates Court, and I was visiting residential homes. And having taught yoga, I used to teach some of the older people in the residential homes some exercises.
And where was the Magistrates Court that you were?
In Aberdare, the Magistrates Court. And I used to go and help quite regularly at a residential home in Mountain Ash. And I used to go to another home in Aberdare that had a mixed variety of people, and sadly they had dementia at different stages. And my eldest daughter used to come along because she was a member, and I'd say, whatever they ask you, give an answer. And they used to say to me, have you seen my mother today? And so you'd say, oh, I must have missed her. And my daughter was asked some leading questions, because obviously she was much younger, and they'd say, I've been shopping and I can't get any tomato sauce anywhere. And at that time she was a food designer, and she said, don't worry, our factory's got a lot of it. So she learned something then that wouldn't have been learned by her, whereas I was older by then. I was in my 50s. So you realise that dementia was causing a lot of trouble. So really, I led a very varied life, and I used to go and help at one of the tea bars at the hospital in Midglam, and very often they'd ring me up and say, We're going to have to close the tea bar this afternoon because we can't get anybody. We're ringing you. Would you like to come down? And it was usually in the holiday time, so I would take my young son, who'd been a member since he was 14. And one day I said, well, you'll have to wear a tabard. He said, it's only a bit of material, which I thought was a lovely attitude from somebody who was 16. And he said, I really feel I've done something worthwhile this afternoon. So that was good.
And so the tea bars and cafes you were working in, what sort of people were you serving at, for example, the Magistrates Court?
Well, Magistrates Court, interesting, this one. I even served my own burglar. And I knew who he was, and I knew where he'd lived. And I said, hello, and how are you today? He said, I've been rumbled. And I knew it was him because somebody in the village had told me. But they said, don't mention his name. In fact, I didn't know his name. And so that was quite an experience. But you're serving people who are going to various clinics, really. And in the hospitals, and then obviously in the court, they're up for different things, some minor things.
And were you also in the courts? Were you also serving witnesses and?
Yes, whoever wanted. And one interesting thing came up, which I've mentioned quite a lot. One young man, he was by himself, so obviously he was over 18 or whatever. He said, "How much do you get paid then?" I said, "Well, no, we're volunteers." He said, yes, but they pay you. I said, well, no, we give of our time. And he said, oh, I think a lot of people still don't realise what a volunteer is. But that, you know, and I think it'll be still there. It depends who you are, where you are, and what you've done.
And you've mentioned the butter mountain as well. How is the butter distributed around the
area? Usually the area or office would have it in Halford West or Pembroke Dock. They'd move it over to Pembroke Dock. Or I'd go to somewhere in Pontypridd area and collect it. But it was very funny. I lived in the village where I still live now. And I told several people I was there giving out the butter and things. Very reluctant to come. But when I was down in Halford West, there was no problem. Everybody was quite happy, and I'd deliver it. I had my son with me, so he'd knock on the door and say, you know, we're from WRVS, WVS. And, but in the village, they wouldn't come. So what I did, I'd go to church, and I mentioned to one or two people there, I said, anybody in pensionable age, I'll be outside the church tomorrow. From my freezer, I'll be collecting the butter and cheese. And good for them, they came. And I said, please tell other people. When I went a few days later, some of the villagers came. But they thought, oh, she's giving out charity.
Yeah.
But when I explained, they've got all this butter mountain and they're trying to get rid of it. A lot of them didn't understand the butter mountain. But thankfully, I did have a contact through the church because I hadn't been there very long. You know, I'd only been there a couple of months, but I didn't keep any myself.
No.
Might have been different had the wine arrived.
The wine instead of the butter. And do you have any other memories or stories about your time in Midglamorgan in the 1980s?
Well, I've been very busy, really, because If sometimes the area manager was always very busy, she'd say, would you fancy going up to Birmingham, or would you fancy in or somewhere close by and just standing in for me? Which was good because I met many more people, and I think that's the beauty of WRVS and now Royal Voluntary Service. Whoever's in, they are friends. They're not just random people, and you keep in touch with many of them, so it's very good.
And then in 1989, you became Joint District Organiser.
That's right.
And how did you get that role?
I think it was too much for the one who was a District Organiser. And so my area manager said, would you please help her? So I really did more or less take over. But it was a bit alarming, a good word this, because the first thing I was given was a pocket alarm. So I thought, what am I taking on? Because I knew what vaguely what the works did. But of course, I would then go out and visit people who are going to use some of our holiday accommodation. But you'd always take somebody with you.
Mm-hmm.
And I always say, we don't know where we're going. And of course, for holidays, you had to make sure they were keeping their home tidy, but not spotless. Because obviously, if perhaps the family went into some of our accommodation and ruined it or messed it up, it was out of service for anybody else. So that was interesting. But I had some interesting stories on that one. Went to one house, and it was a gentleman we were going to see, so I had somebody with me. And walking down towards the house, all I could see was a bare body. So we knocked at the door, and this chap came to the door. He was only topless. And he said, oh no, you want to see so-and-so, he's in the other room. So I said to my partner, I said, come on, in we went. And he was sitting there. Luckily he did have trousers on. So really, it's a very interesting life we have. So
very interesting.
But I did say that my alarm is in one pocket,
mm-hmm.
and she had one of the bricks that were mobile phones in those days.
And did you have any other roles as joint district organiser?
Well, yes, you'd have to go to various council meetings, and I went to a lot of those. And because I'd been trained in the civil service as an instructor, that I was used to meeting people, and I'm quite good at chatting to anybody. I don't look at them and say, I don't like you. I can chat to whoever they are and what. And of course, as you know, religion and politics are way out, mm-hmm. so two subjects you can avoid, so there's not going to be a major row. So, you know, it was interesting.
And you were also involved with emergency services.
Yes.
So how did you start volunteering with that?
Well, I was asked if I'd like to do it, and I thought, oh, yes. Well, I've done old Geiger counters and things, but of course they'd gone by then. And then I was asked if I'd like to go on a course up to Easing Road,
mm-hmm.
which was hard work. It, you know, I still know people who were there. Angela Curry, we were on a course, and you know, you had to really present yourself properly, and they watched you from the minute you left your room. You had to wear your uniform the whole time, and as soon as you left the room, you were being watched, because as they always said, you are representing WRVS, and so you had to be really tidy.
And Easing Road College was a civil defence college.
It was it? Home Office Civil Defence College, which was very interesting. And we were shown some of the air raid shelters there.
And what were your roles and responsibilities with emergency services?
Well, you had to be then training other people. You did three exams. You did your basic exam, which was just learning all about it and how you'd have to present your work. But you couldn't do much instructing then, because you had to get up to the third level to be a senior instructor. And they did ask me, I had passed, and they did ask me if I'd come back as soon as possible, because they wanted me to go on to the next stage. But unfortunately, my son decided to have cancer. So that slid me down for a few years, but I eventually caught up and became a senior instructor.
And did you attend any exercises?
Yes. There used to be a lot of practice exercises, because it was important that people, for the being called out, they needed to be in hand to know exactly what they had to cope with. So we used to run exercise, and that was part of my work as well, to help the manager to set it all up. And so you'd be given certain roles, and you'd hand them out to different people. So one would perhaps be a little bit deaf, and somebody else would be a little bit of an invalid. And you had to learn that foods were different in different religions.
Mm-hmm.
So you had to learn everything like that. It was fascinating, and I'm jolly glad I did do that.
Mm-hmm. And where did the exercises take place?
Usually in leisure centres, because they'd be used for evacuating mm-hmm. anybody too. And we had a good relationship with shops like Tesco's and things. They weren't open 24 hours as they are now. No. But one exercise was at a battery operation up in near Merthyr, and I couldn't do it because I'd had a bit of an accident to a foot, so I managed it all from home. And in the end she rang, she said, "I don't think there's any more food left at the garage." So she bought everything, because you could have Tesco's and those would open for us.
Mm-hmm.
But now of course they are 24 yeah. hours. But that's changed as well. It's not quite the same now. It's R&R.
Resilience and recovery there, isn't it?
It was very good, but so we're not involved so much now.
And what emergencies have you attended?
The fun one, in a sort of a strange way, I wasn't at the ABBA van when it went.
Mm.
I was living in London then. And there was a flooding. I think one of the valves was open in Merthyr Tydfil, and it flooded ABBA van. So there was a call out at 9 o'clock, and I had to call you have your team all lined up, you have your regular people on your team, and you'd ring them to make sure if they were available. They could say no, because you never know what they've been up to. And you went off to deal with it. And this, everywhere in Ambervan was flooded, the roads were flooded, everything, but the police would know you're coming through, so that was fine. And it was in the leisure centre, and there was a wedding at the same time, and they managed to do that, and they said, "Can we open the bar?" And I said, "Well, I wouldn't suggest opening the bar, because we had enough noise last night without a bar being opened." So they went along with that. And then the television, we ran that for a fortnight, which was longer than usual. Normally, at the end of a week, most people could have gone home. And the television people came in, and they wanted to interview people who'd been rescued. And this one lady, sadly, she had lost a child when the school was damaged mm-hmm. and everything. And she was in the boat with the firemen. And she said, "I've always wanted a cruise, and now I've had one." And she was in a little rowing boat with the fire brigade and everything, which was lovely. And they asked me, and I said, "Well, I'd already become a widow." And I said the feeling was rather like being bereaved. Although they hadn't been bereaved, that first time when they came in, they didn't quite know what had happened. They knew they'd been flooded, they knew that they'd been rescued, but there was that horrible feeling of nothing happening. So you just had to be a good listener. And but I can still remember the lady, she was much older obviously, and she said, "I've always wanted a cruise," and I thought she had it right.
Yes.
You know, there's always a good side.
Mm-hmm. And have you attended any other emergencies?
That was the biggest one. And a big factory, everybody's heard of Hoover's, and they had a fire. I was working with the manager, and we would take it in turns to run it, and it was fine. We had all the normal polystyrene mugs and things, 500 at a time in a box, and clearing of it, I rang the manager and said, "There's no need to come back. She'd gone home to work, to sleep, because you take it in 4-hour shifts." And I said, "You can stay in bed." So she said, "I'll see you in the morning then and collect all the bits and pieces you've got, because you have such a lot of things." So clearing up at about 2:30 in the morning, the firemen there said, "Oh, I'll help you." So they were loading everything onto trolleys and things, and there was a big box containing all the mugs. And then at the Hoover factory in Merthyr, there were steps. So he said, "Go and get your car, put it at the bottom of the steps." He picked this big box up, which we hadn't used, it was open at the bottom. Suddenly up to 500 plastic or polystyrene mugs when bouncing down the steps, which was lovely. He said, whoops. But I said another whoops the next morning when I met my manager to hand over all the stuff. And she said, where's everything? And I said, well, it's in my car and in the boot. And she said, what on earth are all those mugs doing? But, you know, they couldn't be left on the,
no,
on the steps. So that was one of the fun moments. But lots of exercises, but luckily, you know, no major events. We were on standby very often for an aeroplane, and you just call up your tribe and things, see if they're available. And you had everything ready, because everybody had a bag ready to go.
Yeah. And what did you have in that bag?
Well, you'd have your personal items. So you'd have perhaps a hand towel and some soap and anything else you used. And then in the grab bag, you'd have all the things. You always kept some cheese and butter and milk and stuff. And then you'd put it in another bag and take it with you, because, and as one of the leaders, you'd have a few more things which you take, and then you could get on with the job.
And how did you feel when you were attending those emergencies?
Getting on with the job. You didn't panic. You learn things, because, I mean, there were lots of exercises. We also did other exercises for other people. And on one, somebody said they were having their curry and whatever, and they said, maybe have it half and half. Well, they didn't say it quite like that. They said, can we have it half and half? And I thought, I'm not quite sure what half and half is. So I said, I'm sorry. He said, well, I want some chips and rice. So I learned something. You even learn something when you're doing a job.
And do you have any other stories or memories about your time volunteering for emergency services?
No, but, you know, being a member of WRVS and everything else, I've loved every minute of it, you know. And I still manage to do other jobs and, you know, carry on doing everything, really. And over the years, you know, I've had different recognised from internet, you know, from Rhonda Cunnantarf, I've had different things. So obviously somebody's pleased with what I've done, and I love it. And you meet so many people, and they're in the same boat as yourself, because they've joined and I've joined. So it's lovely, you know.
And you're also an old people's welfare organiser.
Yes.
In 1990. How did you become the organizer?
Again, because that was sad. Because I'd been doing all other things in, you know, courts and residential homes, the lady who did it before me died very suddenly. So I had a phone call from the area manager and said, would you like to do the clubs with the older people? I said, yes, that'd be fine, because I drive. That was one question I always asked if somebody was going to join us. I said, do you drive? I learned then that was to be a third or fourth question, not a first question, because I didn't realise so many people didn't drive. Their husbands, for some reason, wouldn't let them. So I ended up going all over. I think originally I had about 19, 20 clubs. And now I've got all the South Wales coast as well, down to Barry and everywhere. So I still do it, but the clubs are getting smaller. Everybody else is getting older. I'm just getting a different number behind my age.
And can you tell me about the projects or the services that you ran in Micklemorgan for older people?
Well, they have afternoon clubs mainly, and they usually meet every Monday or every day. I used to have some clubs, and some days there's clubs with three clubs running on the same day. Well, you can't possibly. And as long as, in those days, as long as I visited the clubs at least once in 6 weeks, and if you've got four clubs on a Monday, and that's about takes up all your time. So, and you just go along, and they've usually got, if they've got a large club, they can have speakers in, because they've got the money. They're self-funding, and so they'd have speakers, and it still goes on today. They have their own speakers, so you just go in and you chat to them. I mean, I've been in my area now 27, 28 years, so my clubs know me now, and It's great. So I don't have to wear any uniform at all. But I made sure I got my lanyard on. So it's been super.
And you've already mentioned that the clubs have got smaller, but have the way they've been run changed as well?
I think so, but you see now, most of them are like playing bingo, which is fine, and that's very good in some areas, but a lot of the other clubs will have speakers, and that is even better, because they may be watching television or listening to the radio, but to get somebody actually standing up, and they're usually good speakers, they're not just anybody who happens to turn up. They usually use professional people. They're expensive, but it's good. Mm-hmm. You know, so...
And have you taken your clubs on any trips?
I don't, personally, but the club leaders do. Because there's usually a club leader, treasurer and everybody else, and on a bigger club, they've got a lot of support with other WVS mm-hmm. members.
And you're also involved with residential homes?
Yes, not now so much, because really I'm so involved with all the other clubs, really. So they can run themselves, and even they are changing as well. But I very often used to stand in. As my role got busier, I would stand in if somebody couldn't turn up. Of course, I'm being sent all over the place, which I love. I love meeting people.
And how would you describe what a day club or a Derby and Joan club was?
It was a place for them to meet, because especially in the valley areas, the men would be working and the women would be at home. And we're going back a few years now. And so they were just going along to the clubs and having an afternoon friendship. That has changed quite a lot. Unfortunately, we don't get many men in the club. I think two clubs still have a few men, which is good. But the majority now are women. But the thing is, most young women now, married, they've got children, they're working. So the grandmother of the older age group who would be going to the clubs now has to look after the grandchildren. Mm-hmm. So it has changed from that angle, really. I think I don't know how we get round to that. That's why just the age has changed. And the younger people, younger in the 70s, mm-hmm. now are so busy looking after children. And most of them drive now, where when I first moved to this area, they didn't drive. So really, it's all changed. But it is important, because they can chat to each other and they learn things. But the clubs are so different in different areas.
And why did you want to be involved with that sort of work with the clubs? And
I think that was the main one that came up. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I've been lucky. I've done so many different roles. And when anything is going on, it's usually, you know, see if Mary would like to do that. And I usually, because I haven't got a tie of children, they're all away. And, you know, I'm not very good at doing nothing. Mm-hmm. And I like being busy. And so, you know, I go all over the place.
And before you were an organiser, did you have another role with Derby and Joan clubs before then?
No, not. I've not. Oh, I did find a newspaper cutting from the dark ages, and I was only telling somebody about it the other day, that they had a choir in who were very good, and I said, this is so strange, I found a newspaper cutting some time ago, and I've mislaid it again. And I was studying singing when I lived in North Wales, and I was asked to go along with Madam somebody, because they were always called Madam, and to sing at Derby and Joan Club in Rutherland, and I had to perform as a singer. So it was most interesting to find this newspaper cutting of when I was probably 17 or 18 that I'd sung to a Derby and Joan Club.
Mm-hmm. And Derby and Joan clubs, are they usually held in community centres? And
usually, some have to hire a room, but they're very crafty. If they take a trip on that day, they don't have to pay rent, mm-hmm. because they have to be self-funding, which is difficult because as the club goes smaller, it's not raising enough money, but luckily they'll nip out to lunch somewhere local. Mm-hmm. They don't have to involve, you know. It's a pity they have to be self-funding because it means a lot of them will have to close.
Mm-hmm. And have they always been self-funding?
Yes. But they're usually pretty good at that, you know, with raffles, and they have book stands and different things, you know. So it's pretty good, but they need more support. But I think I can see in the end they're dying out because the older people now do different things. I can remember people in their 40s, mm-hmm. if they were a widow,
yes.
were in black, you know, and it has changed now. I mean, when you see people on television, somebody's in their hundreds, and they're still doing things. One thing is, I haven't mentioned that my mother was looking after evacuees, and in 2008, I was asked if I would be representing a WVS person looking after evacuees. It was with a film company on behalf of the BBC, and the programme was called Coal House at War, and I was delivering evacuees. So it took me right back to when my mother used to check the evacuees over.
And how did you feel about being involved with...
That was fantastic, but I hope you realise I smile a lot, Jennifer. But I was told immediately, and of course I can remember, that if you met somebody, they were Mrs. or Mr. It wasn't, hello Jennifer, hello Mary, hello David. It was always proper, and I found the first 2 days very difficult because my first role was to deliver evacuees, and it had to be, hello, I'm Mrs. Howard Jones, and I'm here to check where you're going to let the evacuees sleep. And I'd been told that you want to rub your fingers over something. Oh my goodness, I think that needs a bit of a clean. And after 2 days I thought, this is hard work. But even the cameramen were told in the end, because the youngsters were normal children coming from all over the place, and a couple of them, one said, can we call you Mary? I said, no, you mustn't call me Mary, because everybody was called by the correct title. And I mentioned this to the producers, and they said, what do you call your teachers? Oh, it's either Miss or what you call the men, Sir. And he said, right, you call Mary Mrs. Howard Jones. And I think they found that difficult. But the youngsters, and you know, at the end of a month, I was there every day for a month, and they got used to it. You know, so that was fun. That was fun. I'd do it again any day.
And did you wear WVS
uniform? I had to, archives loaned me, I think Matthew sent something down and mm-hmm. everything. But the coat was three sizes too small, which was very handy in October. Mm-hmm. And one night it was snowing when I left. Well, normally, as soon as I get to the car, I would take my coat off and slip something else on. It was snowing, isn't it? Because we'd had to pretend there'd been a bomb nearby. And so I thought, well, I can't take my coat off standing in the snow. And so I drove home, and, you know, no arms. And the uniform was great. But one thing, if I arrived, they said, we want you here at 7:00. But they said, would you keep out of sight? Because they knew then something was up. And so I would have to keep out of the way, you know. But... they had an emergency exercise, and I said, well, I can't do that by myself, because you wouldn't go into an emergency by yourself. You'd always have at least two people with you. They said, well, we'll get two more people, WRVS, to come with you, but only you will be talking, because you weren't given a script, you're just given just a sentence. Mm-hmm. And so that was fine. And you'd have to make sure nobody saw you, because they think, oh, she's here again. But it was a wonderful experience, you know. So it was a film, I'll give you the name later, of the company. It was for the BBC.
Mm. And you also, as well as the Coal House at War, you also done talks for MPs and assembly
business people. Yes, as well. And the MPs in Cardiff, the AMs. I've given a talk, and I think David had just started with us, so he was quite new. So he heard me talk, but you had a lot of business people plus the AMs, and I've also been to St James's Palace to talk to the MPs and business people there. And I told them about spending the night with, because invariably they brought their wives, and I told them the night I went to the Hoover fire, and I said there were 5 fire engines then, so there were about 40 men, and it made one of my managers very jealous because I'd spent the night with 40 men. So one wife said to her husband, I think I'm going to join them if that's what they get up to. So, you know, although you're on duty sort of thing,
yeah, it's still great.
And I stood in for the chairman at the House of Parliament, and I knew I was going to give a talk, but then when they rang me, they said, the chairman can't make it, would you give a talk instead of her, please? So I did that as well.
And do you remember which chairman?
I can't remember, it was quite a few years ago. They change after X number of years. It was after
Elizabeth.
It could have been.
Tina, maybe?
Yes, one of those. Mm-hmm. You can sort that out.
Yes, I can look that up.
Yes. And it was in the Ackley Room, and that was rather nice. And I know, because I was giving a talk, I'm so used to doing that, it doesn't bother me. But I thought, no, I must behave. I'm standing in for the chairman now. Not that it worried me, really. And they kept coming up with glasses of wine and things. I said, no, thank you. And then one said, will you have a drink at all? And I said, yes, but I'm going to give a talk. I said, I'll have it afterwards. And they came up and they said, would you like even a tumbler or a glass? Because I didn't want to eat anything, because that's just when you get a crumb in your throat. Had it been my talk, I could have apologised. Mm-hmm. But standing for the chairman, it was... You know, really, I didn't want to show, you know, but it was good. I met whoever was the chairman then, which I haven't seen for such a long time, because I kept turning up at different events.
So. And what sort of things did you used to talk about, tell people about?
Well, you say, really, what WRVS, WVS, and it was WRVS, really, saying what jobs we do and how we introduce ourselves to them, and... because we weren't wearing uniforms so much, but we always had identities with us before these came out. And just talking generally about, you know, what they were doing. And I remember the Secretary of State for Wales at the moment, it was on the 1st of March, and he had a beautiful dragon tie on. And I was talking to him later, and I said, I like your tie. Well, I see him on television now. He doesn't wear the tie, but with dragons all over.
And you also mentioned on your biography sheet that you were there where the WRVS computer was launched.
Oh, that's right. Yes, I was just there as one of the gang that was there. I'm sorry. Sorry, Chairman. I can't remember all your names because you change so regularly, you know. And that's when I met, you know, and... I wasn't involved in giving a talk, I'm just chatting generally. But I know somebody called me and said, we haven't taken a photograph together. And that was one of the chairmen. So it was with a local AM, the chairman, and me. And somebody many years ago said, went up to the archives the other week, and there were loads of photographs of you. I thought, well, they weren't for me, they were on somebody else.
And you also said that you'd laid a wreath at the cenotaph in London.
In London, yes. I should have gone twice, but I did go up. And in those days, there were 12 of us, and we stood at the cenotaph, and we were called the guard with other people. So it was very selective then, because now there's no guard there by the WVS, WRVS or anything else. They're in the main parade. Mm-hmm. And we're in the Home Office, and we were brought out last minute, but we came on last, but we we went off last as well, and one day it was raining and we still had the new hat.
Mm-hmm.
And it was drizzling. We'd been issued with raincoats, thankfully. And when the bishop said, "Let us pray," you could flick all the water off your hat because it was collecting in the brim.
Yeah.
One thing I have mentioned, Wimbledon starting on Monday. Now, for years we used to have desks at Wimbledon, which was great fun. You went up. But one year, somebody from Cardiff, I think she's got letters after her name now, MBs and goodness what, mm-hmm. you know. But she said, "Would your son like to go up to Wimbledon?" I said, "Oh, I'd love to," because he used to come everywhere with me. But and he was the first male to go to Wimbledon. So after that, more men went. But he taught himself Russian in the meantime, and somebody came up, didn't speak any English. And he'd spent all the year teaching himself, because I said he'd been ill. And so he was able to help out somebody Russian. So, but after that, a lot of the men started going, because they should have been asked before.
Mm-hmm.
But
and what were they, sort of information?
Information had a desk, and people would go up and ask, you know, where's this, where's that, and usual question, where are the nearest toilets? Mm-hmm. Because we've all done the Royal Welsh Show, and the first question is, where's the nearest toilet? So you learn where the toilets are, mm-hmm. and that's what he said, it was the same there, but
yeah.
with other queries as well, but that's number one.
Mm-hmm. And did you ever, when you were at the Royal Welsh Show, did you ever get any unusual questions or requests?
No, it's pretty, you know, it's interesting. I haven't done it for 2 years now, but previously I've done it for about 10 years. I'm hoping to go this year. But they invariably, where's the nearest toilet? You know, they are signposted, but how they miss them, I don't know. But I think it's easier sometimes. Yeah. If you're in a hurry, ask.
And you would also provide tea and refreshments?
No, usually we used to have a restroom, mm. but there's plenty of places to buy teas. There's so many bars and things and vans. We just used to have a restroom in the creche.
Mm-hmm.
I used to do the creche, and that used to be good, you know. But you had other people from... We didn't do much with the children, but we just read... And that way emergency services came handy, because you always registered people in... emergencies,
mm-hmm.
that somebody would come in, because invariably somebody'd say, "Have you seen Mrs. So and so?" Well, you'd have their names, and that's what one thing we did at the Royal Welsh. So it was using some of our training. So that was good.
Yeah. And now you are a volunteer partner. So how would you describe your role as volunteer partner?
Well, I've introduced myself now. When I ring somebody up, I had to ring somebody this morning, but she's known me some time. But very often, I'll chat to somebody. There's one club that has about 10 volunteers, mm-hmm. you know. And I'll say, "Of course, I can ring you any time, because if you want to mention something, as a volunteer partner, you can tell me if you don't want to tell anybody else." So it's really a bit like a befriending.
Mm-hmm.
thing, you know, and I'm trying to support two people at the moment, and I ring them up, and which I'd hesitate before, but because I don't know them so well. If they're volunteer helping at a club, and there's 14 of them, but now I can ring them up, and they know me, and I think it's a different role again, because I think volunteers who are working in something like the Derby and Durham clubs. There's no way, if it's a big club, who do you deal with? Do you deal with the volunteers, or do you deal with one of the 90 people attending the club?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a mixed role, but I think it's a role that's got to be advertised more, but mm-hmm. I love it. I'll talk to anybody. Don't laugh.
And then also as a volunteer partner, you're involved with Paul.
Yes, legacies.
Yes.
Because people, even if it's a case of just buying raffle tickets, they are supporting. And I was giving a talk for him in Newport the other week, and one chappy said, "I always buy your raffle tickets." I said, "Have you won?" He said, "No." I said, "Don't worry, I've bought raffle tickets since they started, and I've never won." But my daughter won £100 because I gave her a ticket.
Mm-hmm.
So it's people to thank them, really, and introduce. It was a smaller meeting in Newport, but I've done Swansea and Cardiff and different ones. I love it. I love people. But I've noticed when they come, if it's males, they'll come by themselves. But if it's a female, there's somebody else who's in, and they come with them. So I said to Paul, after the last one, I said, I chucked the men up. And he laughed. I said, well, they're there by themselves, and they're going to sit down and be by themselves. But the women have got somebody else with them. One thing, I did war widow visiting, and that I did that for 8 years. And that was interesting, because it was once every 6 months I'd see them. And it was like a friend coming in, because over 8 years I'd got to know most of them. Some interesting tales then.
And did you visit them individually? Or?
Oh yes, individually, because then you could make sure they were all right. And you don't have to look around. And the same when you visited for holidays. You didn't have to take your eyes off the person you were talking to. You could still see over their shoulders and things. And you could weigh up a lot, you know. And I upset one war widow. She said, would you like a coffee? I said, yes, please. She said, oh, go and put it on now. I said, please, could I have cold milk? She said, oh, no, I always boil my milk. So the next time she said, now, you don't like boiled milk? I said, no. And so you became quite friendly with them, but that had to stop because the people who ran, we were running, WRVS were running on behalf of social services or whatever, and they said, I think Mary will have to be trained for this job.
Mm-hmm.
And my manager said, well, she's done it for 8 years. Oh, but it's in the rules now. Nobody can go out unless they've done the training. So we decided, if that's how they feel, they'll just lose WRVS. I think I was the only one that did it, because it was in South Wales, you see, but I was very short-sighted. So, of course, I didn't ring them all up.
No.
And say, I'm not coming again. They probably wondered, but, I mean, that could stay with the pension people.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'd send in a report on what happened to my manager, who'd then send it on to the pension people. But I loved it because, you know, I had a lot of them on my car, and I'd just go and see them and by myself, and it was lovely. They were glad to see somebody they could talk to, and they could tell me all sorts of things, you know. So I was war widowed. Sorry, I forgot that one.
No, it's fine. They were they widowed by the
in the Second World War. Yes. So you
because
know.
I read that some of the reports and things that I've read at the archive, they mention the pensions being altered and war widow work.
That's right. And I had a very good friend. I still have her, and she lost her husband. He was a flight lieutenant over India. He was killed, so he never saw the baby that his wife was having. So, you know, I felt, and all my life through WRVS and WVS, now especially getting older myself, I have been there. So
yeah.
I mean, over the years, since especially moving to Midglam, they say, oh, you're only a youngster, you know, and you're in your 50s.
Mm-hmm.
Then you're in your 60s. And they still say, oh, you're a baby, you know. And they still tell me I'm only young. But I've always felt that I've been widowed. I've lost both my parents when I was younger. And I've had somebody with cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel now I've had so many of the things that they're going through that I can
relate
to them, because one lady had cancer and she was very reluctant to talk about it, but as we were leaving one of the clubs, I said to her, you probably didn't realise that my son had cancer. And I didn't say, how are you, because the leader had told me all about her. And when I used to be at the club, she always gave me a big hug. And when I rang her, because she was in hospital, I went to see her in hospital, and I said, we didn't speak about it. I said, but your big hug said it all. Mm. Now, I hadn't said, how's the cancer, how's this, how's that. So I was doing the right thing. I think having been there yourself, it helps. So, you know, they've helped me. I just love them.
And are there, so like the War Widows, are there any other services you've been involved with that WRAS have stopped providing?
No, the War Widows, it was a shame. I mean, WRAS didn't do that. It was the pension people, which was a shame because I'd had experience. And somebody, not everybody's going to do that job anyway, because you're going into a sad situation, but you have to be the right sort of person and you can chat to somebody. And I mean, they were all good friends in the end, after 8 years.
Yes.
You know, so, no, it wasn't WRVS stopped that, but...
And also, so during, in 2004, we had the sort of change of the colours to the purple and orange and... sort of changed the name to WRVS rather than calling it Women's Royal Voluntary Service. What was your experience of that?
Well, you either go with the changes or you forget it. What I didn't like, a lot of people didn't like it, and they'd say to other people that it, but change is a good thing. You know, it moves on. You don't always have to agree with everything, but as long as the basic things are there. But I'm delighted because I don't like green, even if I did wear it on Saturday at the Forces Day. I would never choose bottle green to wear. Purple I love. In fact, I've got loads of purple, and my present manager says, oh, you've got the colours on again. But I happen to have, because my husband didn't like purple. So, I mean, I wouldn't say I didn't have anything, but certainly I have a lot of purple in my wardrobe now. And what's happened? They've changed the colour again.
Yes. And what do you think about the name change as well, dropping the W?
I think it's a change, but I think people have to get used to it. Unfortunately, still people don't know what we do.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, years and years ago, people used to say to me, what do you do? I said, you name it, we do it. Because, you know, I'm going back to the 80s. We did. We nearly did every job that was going. But now, and then you say, we're in hospital. Oh, yes. I think that's all we did and do. But you just have to somehow get over it. I said, you know, I've been on the radio with different people, you know, Sally and different ones, but it doesn't get through what we do. So I think it's another change, but you just have to go with the changes. But we need definitely some better advertising or whatever. But it all costs money. Mm. This is the thing. But, of course, changing all the signs now, it's all money, that, you know.
Yeah.
We haven't got funding now from the government. We have to raise our own money. But how do you do it? I think Saga magazine doing the article on WRVS, that was a good thing. Because I've had a different calls, and one person I hadn't had contact with for about 30 years, she happened to be reading Saga and she thought, hang on, that's Mary.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we need something like that to be in a popular magazine.
Yeah.
Not Saga. Saga's good because they've been very good. But we need to be in a popular magazine. I think that's the only way we're going to get the message over. And we claimed two new members from my talk in Newport.
Oh.
They thought, well, if she's 82 years old, well, I'm not, but you know, if she's doing it still, and they were two ladies, and they said, I've got so much time on my hands, and she had left it, so really they were more or less signed up then. So, but we do need to be in something a little, you know, because our radio calls are usually before 8 o'clock, and if you're younger, you're getting the children off to school, getting, or you're not up, or everything, you know. I think we need to be in a popular magazine somehow to show we've got youngsters in. You know, my two youngsters were in, but there was no publicity, you see. I think that's what we need. We need publicity.
Do you have much contact with your local hub in Cardiff?
Oh yes, I'm always in touch, you know. That's why I suggested coming here today. Because, you know, I have good contact with everybody. The two new girls, Karen and Gwyneth, we've got between area locality managers, yes. I've got a good contact with those two because they're coming to different clubs and we chat, you know. So that's good.
Mm-hmm.
But we see people like that we need, and we need something in magazines, but we need to be in schools. This is the thing. We need to be in schools. On their CV it does good because they're doing voluntary work.
So you'd like to see more younger people. So we used to do the Duke of Edinburgh, help with the Duke
of
Edinburgh
Award. That's right, yes. You see, that's what we need, but we need to be in a younger magazine somehow, because we've got quite a lot of youngsters, you know. So we've got to publicise what we've got. We're not all in our 90s and we've got some people in their 100s now, you know. We're not all old and sitting at home doing nothing. We're all active, and people are going to be more active and live longer. So we must get in some magazines.
And how much contact, well, you talked about the project managers and the local locality managers, but sort of between the mid 1990s and last couple of years, we haven't really had a hub or a centre that you could have contact with. So has having the new hubs affected your role at all?
I'm lucky because I've always had good contact with the offices wherever they've been. I mean, Abingdon and all the way down here, you know. So I'm okay, but I think everything is a hub now.
Mm-hmm.
All the big companies are hubs. I'm not quite sure how that will work. I think in the end of the day, people are saying, oh, it's just like another big firm, they've got this and that and something else. We have to be careful, we're not going to lose ourselves in little hubs. I think we need to get out and advertise more to show we've got youngsters in. And we're not all going to live into the hundreds and we're going to run out of energy. We need some youngsters coming in now who know what we are about.
And so, saying all about the publicity that we need, where would you say Royal Voluntary Service's place in society is today?
They still think of us in hospitals because we also lose our role in the hospital. I think the Heath, because I was tied to the Heath when my son was ill, and I always used to go and chat to anybody, and when I have hospital visits I go and chat to anybody on the tea bar. But a lot of people don't realise what we're doing. Of course, now there's no uniform.
No.
At least if you had a green tabard on, it said something. You know, a big Royal Voluntary Service across you, and then just a badge. I don't think now, with the change of uniform again, we've got to get something that shows one hospital's got a new thing, and they're not allowed to advertise. They're not allowed to put up a sign.
Mm-hmm.
So how do they know it's voluntary service there? I think somebody's got to look at that, otherwise they're not even going to realise, oh, you're in the hospitals, aren't you?
So would you suggest that we need to sort of, with the new branding and the green and the red and the new sort of circles we've got in our name, do we need to use that in the hospital? Like we used to have the purple and orange.
That's right. Displays. And get somebody, as my son said, when I said, well, you'll have to wear a tabard, he said, it's only a bit of material.
Mm-hmm.
Having a tabard on showed, because it looks as if you're working, but, you know, we've got to advertise ourselves more. But I think it's getting into schools, getting into magazines. That Saga magazine worked, because somebody only rang me the other week and said, oh, I was in the doctors and I picked up Saga and you were in it. Now, it didn't matter if it was me or somebody else.
No.
They'd have heard of WRVS and they saw something in the magazine. But not everybody goes to the hospital.
No. And not everybody reads Saga.
No, this is it. We need to be in something more modern, definitely.
And What do you think is the future for Royal Voluntary Service?
Without good advertising, it won't last, because how many people are joining now in their 30s, 40s, 50s? See, we need the youngsters in, because I know my mother got me in. I was in my 20s and I got my two children in. But we need that younger group coming in. See, as my interviewer now,
yeah.
You know, she's younger, and a lot of people are younger now, but you see, we need more younger people. But we need some format. I'm not saying everybody has to get a uniform. My last uniform cost £115. You know, but the tabard or just a fleece or something. I had a nice lilac fleece. Can't wear it now. Even if I had a new badge on it, I could stick it on. You see, we need something that shows who we are.
So that people recognise us when you're walking down the street.
Going somewhere. Well, I was, after going on Saturday to the Armed Forces Day, I was pretty tired because it was so hot. And I thought, oh, it'd be good to get home. But then I thought, oh, nip to Tesco's. There are Sainsbury's, Madison's, all the other supermarkets. I heard somebody say, who's that lady in green? And the lady said to the man, that's somebody in WRVS. I was just, I mean, I haven't changed. I didn't take my hat off because my hair would have fallen down because I've got long hair. And so, you know, I didn't go there to show off WRVS or anything, but I did have my green uniform on. And he was wondering, you know, and she knew what it was. Obviously, she'd seen us in hospitals because of the green. But, you know, I like the new colour and I like purple. But I wouldn't have bought bottle green. But then I've worn it. I mean, I've had to wear it. So.
Do you have any other stories or events that have happened to you as a volunteer that you'd like to share?
Well, I always talk about the night I spent with 40 firemen. I mean, it was, you know, they were busy, so was I. And, you know, all the things falling out. And it's friendship.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoy people, I love people, and I don't weigh them up. They're people. And some are lovely, and some are friendly. And if you give them a smile, they usually smile back.
Yes.
And it's a friendship, really. And then people that you haven't seen for years, you go to something, because I was on Shaping Our Age, and we were only meeting 3 times a year. But when you met, there'd be one or two, only 4 from WRVS were on that committee, the rest were random charities. And you'd meet up and just say, oh, hello, nice to see how it's been going. Yeah. And one, I used to ring, and she used to ring me from Yorkshire, because you were in the same lot, you know. Only 4 of us, but, you know.
And you also celebrated 60 years of being a volunteer?
Yes, I suppose I've done 62 years now. I've got clasps and things. And, of course, I had a diamond thing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you were a diamond champion.
They couldn't find anybody else, you see, that's the thing. I was very proud to get that. It was lovely.
And were you nominated by somebody?
Yes. Now, I was nominated by 2 people, and I nominated one of them, but you had to ask permission, so I'd run this person. And when I had the letter to say that I was going to St. Paul's, I rang her, but it was her answer phone, so I said, oh, I've got something to ask you, because you could take somebody.
Yeah.
And I nominated her, you see, and I put 5 people in. And she rang me back. She said, I was going to ring you because I've had a letter. And somebody from her club had nominated her because, although she'd only been WRVS 8 years, she had done loads of volunteering before.
Yes.
And I said, oh, brilliant. So we both ended up at the City Hall together. And, you know, that was lovely.
Mm-hmm.
So got there.
And did they have a big celebration for you?
Oh, the one photograph there. I haven't given you that one. Roy Noble was there. No, was he? Yeah, and he was dishing out them, you know, called, because there were only 60 from Wales, and but they weren't all at the City Hall. But it was lovely when the other one went up for hers, because, you know, she was wanted to ring me and tell me, and of course she knew I'd nominated her, so I took my friend that I always have with me, you know, she's WRBS, yes, and she had one of the club people who nominated her. So lots of lovely things, you see. Yeah. And I've got loads of slate things saying thank you for the work you've done. I've had vice chairman certificates, mm-hmm, and they're all in the file.
Yeah. So. Do you have a favourite or most memorable moment of being with WBS or WRBS?
I don't think I can pull out one, because each one is special. I mean, you probably know, you can't possibly like everybody, but at the same time, you don't dislike them, but you make some good friends, and so it changes, really. It's, everything's good. And I mean, I'm lucky because I work with the club, so I'm now losing some of my clubs. I just need more to do now. But, you know, I don't want to Butter Mountain again.
No.
Because I think I must have driven miles, and it's a responsibility looking after that. Don't think we'd have that. But, you know, I've enjoyed everything, and it's kept me young. And one of my daughters said, it's like a full-time job. I said, okay. At least I don't pay more tax.
Well, thank you very much, Mary, and that would be a good contribution to our Voices of Volunteering project.
Thank you very much, Jennifer.